Okay, my friends, let your fingers do the walking. Make the phone call. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. She'll try to give you some advice and answer your questions as well right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. We'll get to your calls as well as we talk about your money, cash management. Catherine, how did you get interested in this field? Were you always in the money when you were even younger?
I grew up in a poor neighborhood, or a modest neighborhood in West Philadelphia, and I kept seeing all the terrible things going on, whether the drugs came in or the mortgage fraud, and I kept asking people, you know, why are we doing all these things that ruin our neighborhood? And everybody kept saying, well, we need to make the money. We need the money. And finally I decided, okay, well, what is this thing money called money, and why is everybody, you know, letting it control their life or ruin their neighborhood? So I thought I would figure out how the money in the neighborhood worked and figure out how we could make more money making neighborhoods wonderful. And what I didn't understand when I was a child was that to understand how all the money in West Philadelphia worked, you had to understand how all the money in the planet worked.
Yeah.
So I just kept following the thread. You know, I figured, okay, well, I'll go to Wall Street and I'll learn how all the money works. And then it was pretty clear after a while that a lot of it was getting rigged from the central bank and government in Washington. So I said, okay, I'll go to government and figure out how that money works. So I don't know if you ever remember in Godfather 3 when Michael Corleone says, the higher I go, the dirtier it gets.
Yep, he's so right. Hey, I want to get your take on the presidential campaign so far.
Uh-huh.
I really haven't had an opportunity to talk with you about that, but so it's getting vicious. You know, one side accuses the other. The libertarian kind of wants to stay out of it. You know, if he can get 10%, Johnson, as a libertarian, that's pretty good. But what do you think about Trump and Hillary, Catherine?
Well, you have two candidates that have almost a 60% disapproval rating, each of them. And that's a terrible situation to be in, George. And the reality is, you know, we've seen strong indications from Trump that he's going to bring transparency to things about the Clintons that no one has ever brought transparency to in the major media.
Right.
So I'm assuming he will do that. And if he does that, it's really going to put the American establishment on both parade and on trial. So I think this could get very
ugly.
Very ugly. But the reality is, I also think that some transparency, you know, I think we're literally choking on secrecy and privilege. So I think some of that transparency I certainly welcome. And, you know, as my favorite quote from Tina Turner is, we can do this nice or rough. And I would rather we do it rough than not do it. So
it's
time to really talk about how we are running the country and how we stop running it that way.
It's going to be rough. There's no question about that. And,
right.
You know, as you look at the candidates, more and more people I talk to, those 60%, they're just not happy with what they've got to vote for.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things I always say is control of the country was stolen one county at a time. So for heaven's sakes, turn off paying any attention to the presidential election and start really paying attention to what's going on in your county, because you can make a huge difference there. And in fact, that's how control really works. It's bottom up, one county at a time. So for many of us, our sheriff is much more important to us than our president.
Do any of these two candidates, though, have the ability to negotiate with the Chinese, with Putin, with you know, without causing flare-ups and problems? I mean, China, it's getting tense with China right now. China's starting to flex.
What a president needs to negotiate internationally, but certainly with the Chinese and Putin, is they need the confidence of the country behind them. So they need the Congress behind them.
Yes.
They need the media behind them. But most of all, they need the people behind them. And it's very difficult to imagine either one of these candidates achieving that.
I agree with that. Let's take some calls. Jay in New Orleans, let's get started here with you, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Long
time listener, first time caller.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, love your show. I just wanted to talk more to both of y'all about Bitcoins and see if we could bring that to the table.
Sure.
I'm a huge proponent of them, and I think that they are potentially the next biggest thing that will happen in my lifetime. I'm 30 years old. I think they're the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Do you have bitcoins?
Oh yeah, I have savings in bitcoins, and then also I try and use some in whatever transactions I can on the day to day. But of course, it's limited at this point.
And if I can ask, if you don't want to tell me, you don't have to. But how much are your bitcoins worth?
Well, right now, a Bitcoin is worth about $750.
Okay.
I don't really want to talk about exactly what I have invested. But,
Do you have a million of them stashed away?
I wish. It's a fair percentage of my savings. The way that I see it as an investment, it is basically a wager on the idea that humans will continue producing electricity.
Right.
I think that it's going to be life-changing.
But, Jay, you're not scared that you physically don't have it in your possession, that it's out there somewhere in the ether?
I mean, you physically don't have your bank account in your possession these days. And everything is digital. That's just a bunch of numbers on a server in a bank. And at this point, I trust the architecture of Bitcoins more than I trust the bank.
All right. What do you think of that, Catherine? Jay trusts Bitcoins more than the banks.
Well, I'm one of those people, I don't like to put all my money in anything. So I'm a squirrel, I like to spread it around. But here's what I would say. Where Jay and I agree, I think, is that blockchain technology is going to revolutionize the financial system and many transactions, including non-financial transactions. And that is absolutely happening. Now, whether Bitcoin is the cryptocurrency that emerges as the leader, I don't know, because I think there's going to be a lot of prototyping. But blockchain technology is going to really reinvent and transform the financial system. And in that sense, I think Jay and I agree about the how powerful the impact of this technology is going to be. Blockchain is the technology behind Bitcoin.
What could go wrong with Bitcoin, Catherine?
Well, you're always talking about an EMP attack.
That's right.
You know, EMP attack, and Jay's right. It's not just going to be his Bitcoin, but it's going to be the whole banking system. So
everything goes.
That's why I always say, you know, whether it's bottle of vodkas or precious metals or, you know, plenty of food or other things. And this gets back to the diversification. So there's no magic bullet here. And that's why I say I'm a squirrel. You know, I've got, if you read our book, Where to Stash Your Cash in 2016, you know, I talk about many, many, many arrangements. So, for example, when I got hit with a very serious litigation, I had lent George and given to friends and family $250,000, and that was the money that kept me alive for 11 years. They all got together, and I said, well, I guess she needs it back. So they paid me back, or they gifted it back.
Well, I hope they intended to pay you back.
Well, no, some of it was just gifts.
Yeah,
some of it
that's true.
Gifts. And, you know, or it had been loans without any, you know, it was just done on a handshake.
Sure.
It was verbal. And
I've
what
done
happened
that.
Was it was goodwill out on my network is really what kept me alive. And so, you know, that's why your community and having banking, you know, I really believe in banking in your family, friends, and community. And that's, you know, it was that money that turned out that kept me alive. And I had, you know, I had millions sitting in the big banks. But, you know, good luck with that.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't think it's either or. I think it's and. And as Jay, your caller knows, there are times when having money out on the Internet, you know, in digital form can be unbelievably convenient.
What do you think of jewelry like diamonds and things like that?
Well, you know, I think diamonds are a girl's best friend. You know, and that's why traditionally we've used diamonds in wedding bands. You know, that's the family cash reserve.
Did you get the 7 carats we sent you, by the way, as like thank you for being a guest so many years for us? I guess we should have sent it registered. Oh, well, it's gone.
But diamonds are certainly, you know, they're certainly a, you know, I'm sort of a Cougar Ann girl myself. I like precious metals. But, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you've ever been with, you know, some of these wonderful Asian families where you have 8 women literally loaded down with gold necklaces, and they're just carrying their cash reserve around on them.
Oh,
you know,
my God, yeah.
They just wear it.
Now, where do some of these foreigners get so much money? I mean, you see them everywhere, and they have cash galore. Where in the heck do they get it?
Well, we you know, starting in the 90s, we accelerated the globalization process. And as we did that, George, you have a managerial class and an entrepreneurial class in the emerging markets and around the world that have really, you know, led the transformation of their countries from very low per capitas to now high and growing, particularly in Asia. That's where we're seeing the convergence of per capita incomes. And that's created significant fortunes all around the world. You know, and where did they get it? They get it on us outsourcing our manufacturing. They got it on building the infrastructure in those markets or now building consumer markets. It's a very broad-based economic phenomena, but we've seen dramatic growth in those markets and a real effort to provide the commodities to support that. So, yeah, there have been tremendous fortunes made, both in the developed world and the developing world.
Let's go east. Mark is truck driving in Florida. Mark, welcome to the program. You're up with us.
Yes, how are you doing this evening?
Good, Mark.
My mother is English. I was over in England last year, and this upcoming vote of the EU is weighing heavy on both of our hearts. It seems to be quite a divide between the young and the old. The older people that were around before Britain was joined with the EU want to secede from the Union, whereas the younger people who don't know how good it was previously want to stay in it. There seems to be a Germany is profiting from all of the countries in the Union by their manufacturing base, and the majority of the manufacturing in Europe is being done in Germany. Therefore, right, their economy is doing extremely well, but the other countries that do not have as much of an manufacturing base are sending their stuff to Germany and then buying their products from Germany. So Germany is doing very well. But the regulations are absolutely ridiculous, from labor to requiring even small store employers to pay 6 weeks vacation, because that's what the EU says. When Margaret Thatcher started or agreed to the union, it was primarily for trade, and each official that has gotten into office since has added more and more regulations. Right. So England is regulated to death as far as labor, as far as the health care. My mother's been waiting 3 years to have a knee replaced that they messed up the first time. And you can twist her ankle because it's loose, and she's waited 3 years to try to get that done. It's definitely the arguments on both sides are very strong, and the company owners that have European-based economies are for staying in, but everybody else is for getting out.
Basically, the Mark is, he's absolutely, you're absolutely right. These are excellent comments. The European Union is really about non-accountable centralization. And one of the reasons you're seeing tremendous frustration both in Europe and here is people are sick of non-economic centralization, and they understand that it is destroying the productivity of the average population. You hear a lot of economists saying, oh, you know, productivity is going down. Why? Well, anybody who's struggling dealing with this kind of regulation, George, understands immediately why. It's that kind of centralization that is really destroying the productivity of the average person. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw the latest polls in the United States. 80% of Americans think the UK should vote to leave.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
That's pretty high. Deb in the Bronx, you're up with us. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you? Good evening.
Thank you.
George, I am a second-generation baby boomer. And just like my mother and dad, first-generation baby boomers, we were living on a different wavelength. We follow virtues. We follow practicality. We went with what we needed, not what we wanted. The gentleman said he feels that it's split between young and old. Yeah. The young ones who trust technology, and then the baby boomers, both generation, and the children of the baby boomers, second generation.
Yeah.
Because my son, you know, he knows the good virtues and the values, but realistically, they're not cooperating. These, you know, fathers that owe child support, a lot of guys want to pay, but they can't because nothing's available. And this banking system, purposely, it is purposely designed that way. People need to wake up, just like she said.
What do you think, Catherine? Deb, thank you.
Another, George, your listeners are so smart.
Oh, they're the best. They are the best.
So let me say it this way. One of my favorite quotes is, crime that pays is crime that stays. And if we want to get back to the election and what Trump's going to go after the Clintons, you know, if you look at the racketeering that the Clintons have done globally with the foundation and some of the things related to the email,
right?
We're talking about patterns of criminality, and whether it's the banks or the different political leaders or different business leaders, you know, one of the great examples is if you look at how many fines have been levied on J.P. Morgan Chase, it's unbelievable. They break the law, then they pay back a little kickback.
And they still make money.
And they just keep doing it again and again. And we're now into the scores of basically what should have been criminal indictments. People should have gone to jail. And the young people are watching this, George, and they're saying, you know, in America, the way to get to the top is organized crime.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they don't believe in the virtues because they don't want to be the patsy. And if anything is killing productivity, it's this, is people looking at the system and saying, crime that pays is crime that stays. I don't want to finance the crime anymore by being the patsy.
Well, with all these allegations, why hasn't it collapsed around them? I don't get it.
Well, because the system is financially dependent. I mean, if you look at the Wall Street Washington machine, the system is dependent. And we've talked about this many times before. It's a global game, and we're dependent. And it's coming to a head because, you know, the addiction to dirty money is literally destroying the culture and destroying the productivity. And this is coming to a head. And we've reached the point, George, where our enemies don't respect us and our allies don't trust us. And the problem with the economy is not an economic problem. Economies don't work on a basis of money. They work on trust. And when trust breaks down, money's worthless.
Well, that's an interesting quote, too. When trust breaks down, money's worthless. And that is so true. Catherine, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take some final phone calls with you. Catherine Austin Fitz, our special guest. Her website, Solari.com. Do go to it. She's got some incredible information there all the time, and she puts out one heck of an advisory newsletter as well with the Solari Report. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take calls with her next. Okay, here we are with Catherine Austin Fitz. We're going to try to get as many of your calls in. Lots of you have been on hold for some time. Catherine, where do you travel to next?
Well, I'm in Montana right now, and I head back. I'm going up to New York to see both Hamilton and Sleeping Beauty on July 4th weekend, and then I come back to Hickory Valley, and then, George, I head to Switzerland and Lake Constance to see the opera.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, so this is, July is going to be high culture month.
I was going to say, you're very cultured, Catherine, aren't you? You're very cultured. Geez, I'm into all kinds of accents and impressions tonight. What's going on?
Well, I do, you know, I work with people in Zurich, so I always try and get to Zurich at least once a year, once every other year.
Let's go to our Skype caller, Chuck. He's in Florida. Chuck, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
George, this is Chuck. Last time we talked, I was working in Vietnam.
That's right. I remember that, Chuck. Welcome back home.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Hey, well, first of all, thanks for letting me talk. And I'm a fan of Catherine Fitz. Been listening to you guys on the air for a long time. I've been really fortunate, Catherine. I, I've been able to pile up a lot of money. I'm at work as an international consultant in the steel industry, and I bounce around on jobs all over the place. And I've accumulated a lot of cash, and I got piles of cash here and accounts there. And I don't trust the markets, but I have some money in IRAs. And maybe I need your book, is what I told Tom. I'm curious of what it says. Dan, I want to thank you for mentioning Clinton's and racketeering in the same sentence. I think they ought to be called in for a RICO Act violation.
Well, you kind of, you know, if I don't know if you've read the book Clinton Cash, but you kind of wonder what it's going to take.
you never know. Chuck, thanks for the call. Appreciate the comments and being part of the program. I'm glad you're back from Vietnam. Yeah, he used to call us, Catherine, via Skype in Vietnam, listening to the show, because this was one of the ways that he stayed in touch with what was going on here in America.
So he's certainly one of the guys who's seen all those different fortunes made.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What do you think of the stock market? I mean, how high can it go?
Well, here's the thing, George. If you look at what's happening with technology, there are a lot of trends that will that can push the market higher. The problem is that it's not broad-based enough. We've seen the U.S. market grow tremendously, and policies be implemented by corporations, including stock buybacks, that really help juice earnings. So the American markets have, to a certain extent, used financial steroids to really outperform international and emerging markets. And at some point, markets return to the mean. So we see the foreign markets much more underpriced. And so the question for a lot of Americans is, how can the U.S. market stay high given that the forward earnings really are coming lower? And that's why you're hearing so many economists talk about productivity, because they're worried that you can't continue to keep those earnings. And what I would say is we've over-centralized, so the EU's mad about centralization, the UK's mad about centralization, and people in America are mad about centralization, and that's because you have organized your economy so your corporations and places are, you know, have a win-lose relationship. And so I think we have to rethink how we're organizing that centralization and get back to a world where, remember when people used to say what's good for America, what's good for General Motors is good for America? People don't feel that way anymore. It's much more a win-lose relationship, and we've got to get back to the win-win model, and that's where we can begin to build trust again.
But can we build trust? That's the big question.
Of course we can. Of course we can. You know, but here's the thing. You can't have crime pay. We can build trust if crime, because all economies work based on a covenant, and that covenant is basically embodied in cultural and formal law. You know, law is the rules we agree we're going to play by, and if some people are free to break the law and be lawless on a perpetual basis, particularly with our taxpayer money, if I have to pay taxes and you can use that money to racketeer globally and to sell, you know, sell the rug out from under me, then nothing's going to work. But remember, here's the little secret about the economy that can make all of us powerful. If you said to me, if we could behave in a lawful way globally and simply run the economy to optimize wealth, you know, the wealth existent on this planet is 1% of what it could be. That's why, you know, the global stock markets have grown tremendously over the last 20 years. In 1990, global stock markets were $11 trillion. Today, they're $70 trillion. Now, certainly, some of that is the monetary policy debasement of the currency, but I think we're going to a world where we're going to go to a much more equity-based model, and stock markets are going to go to $150 trillion.
Wow.
We can get there. The thing that's holding us back is we're in this win-lose relationship between people and places and corporations, and we've over-centralized, and that has to change, or else we're going to choke on it. So I think the question is, can we build the trust? And if we build the trust, there's no reason for scarcity on this planet that I know of.
Now, bubbles, the Jewish Shemitah, the seven-year cycles, 2001, 2008, 2015, we really didn't hit it, but I don't. What do you think? What do you think of these cycles?
Well, we're choking on our debt. And of course, those cycles are designed to, you know, to wipe out the debt. And we are globally choking on the debt, but it's divided between people who can, you know, print money off a computer to pay their debt and those that can't. So I think the big question mark is how are we gonna bust through the fact that we're choking on the debt? And that's why I keep saying we have to shift to a more equity-based system, and we have to get to an equity-based system that's successful. We have to rebuild the relationship between people and places and companies.
Let's go west of the Rockies. We're going to Salt Lake City, Utah right now. Michelle is with us, and you're on with Catherine Fitz. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Michelle.
Nice to talk to you, and you too, George.
Well,
but,
thanks.
My question is, we just sold an office building, which gives us about $1 million. We have some rental property. I don't know where to put it. I don't like to gamble, which is what I feel I'm doing in the stock market.
Right. Well, there are ways of doing investing in the stock market. For example, I tend to use what I call hedge portfolios, which have a lot less volatility, both up and down. So there are ways of doing the stock market so that you get the dividends, but you don't take the kind of downside risk that, you know, we've seen over the last 10 years when the market can drop 25 or 50%, which it can. It's very
volatile. What is that called again?
It's a hedged, not, it's H-E-D-G-E-D.
Yeah. It's not a hedge fund.
Yeah, hedged equity. So
okay.
you stay invested so you get those dividends, but you're the person managing the fund. They write puts or they do hedges so that if the market drops, you know, you're protected on the downside. So one way is, you know, so you want to find ways of doing it that get you that dividend but protect you from the volatility. So those exist, but certainly you shouldn't put money in anything you don't understand and you're not comfortable with, because it's very important that wherever your money is, you're not losing sleep over it. So, but there are plenty other places, and I would encourage you to get the Where to Stash Cash in 2016. There are plenty of places to do it. You just want to keep very broadly diversified, and you want to make sure in every different avenue in which you put resources or cash, that it's a quality custodian, and if you have people managing your money, it's quality manager, and they're putting it in quality companies. Because no matter how bad things get, it's the quality organizations, quality company, quality people that really always seem to make it through.
And that's a pretty good sum, making $1 million on an office building these days, isn't it?
Well, first of all, congratulations. Celebrate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Daryl in Sacramento, California. Hi, Daryl. You're on. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, Daryl. Thank you.
Quick question. I thought you were going to answer the bubble question, and if we're in a bubble and is it going to break, and what's the outcome? Number two, how do these lending companies that advertise on the radio, they're going to loan you $2,000 at the end of you meet every payment, you owe them $13,000. Number one question is, how much insurance, life insurance, how do I figure out how much life insurance I need for my situation? How do we figure that out?
Ooh.
Bubbles and life insurance.
Well, a couple of questions there. I think life insurance, you need to talk to somebody who really knows life insurance very well, and you have to be able to disclose your specific situation. So it's very unique, and you should never get advice on any topic like that unless you're talking to somebody who really understands your unique needs and situation. That's number one. Number two, I think in one sense we're in a bubble, George. We certainly have the Western Central Banks,
yeah,
who've engaged in very liberal monetary policy in a variety of ways. At the same time, what's happening is both globalization and technology is phenomenally deflationary. And so on one hand, we have monetary bubbles, but we also have labor and technology deflation that's offsetting. And that's why I call it the slow burn, because we're not in any kind of hyperinflation If anything, the fundamental trends are very deflationary, and the central banks are trying to print their way out of it, and they're struggling.
Catherine, what are some of the highest percentages of dividends returns you've seen out there? How high can you get? 2%, 3%, 5%? What do you think?
I think, you know, occasionally in some industries, particularly if they're down, you can go in and pick up more than 5%. You know, you can see stock situations where you get 5 to 7. But generally, you may be taking too much principal risk or currency risk with those. And generally, what you will find is the history of dividends, George, say two things. Dividends matter, but traditionally, you are better off investing in a company that gives you a lower yield but has a steady history of increasing dividends.
Right.
And you will do better with companies that have a steady record of raising dividends than the companies with the highest dividends.
My dad used to love Ford Motor Company stock. He used
to
love it.
You know, it's really funny. The right at the bailouts, at the worst moment in the stock market, we have a fantastic mayor where I live, and he drove up to my house in a brand new Ford red pickup truck, and he walked in, slammed the door, he says, "Buy Ford stock."
He was right.
He was dead on right.
He was right. Steven, Miami, Florida, first time caller. Steven, go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing? I'm a police officer down here in Miami.
Thank you, sir, for serving.
Oh, thank you very much. I just want to say, George, thank you for all your service you've given everybody out there. You're an inspiration to a lot of people, especially me.
Thank you.
I also want to say hi to Catherine. Hi, Catherine. And I have a question about the economy where we're heading. There's a man named James Dale Davidson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He's an economist, and he believes that we're on the verge of a dollar breakdown, and he sees hyperinflation taking over the United States. Another man who's also an economist, his name is Harry Dent, and he thinks when this happens, we're not going to have hyperinflation, we're going to have hyperdeflation. I'm just curious about your comments or your thoughts on that.
Right. I think that the dollar is slowly losing market share, but I think that process is going to be much longer, and in fact, before we get to a real significant drop in dollar market share, in fact, one of our dangers is the dollar moves much higher in value, and that's because you have countries and companies all over the world who've borrowed in dollars, and they can't print dollars, and so we run the risk of a dollar bear trap, and I think it's one of the reasons the Fed has been very careful not to raise interest rates. If they raise interest rates, they make the dollar stronger, and that bear trap gets tougher globally. And given the global slowdown, they're concerned about that. So I think the immediacy of a dollar breakdown is unlikely. Now, the problem is we have a real drop in confidence in leadership, and if the politics get too ridiculous, you know, anything can happen. So
yeah, that's true.
That scenario is possible. I just think it's a small percentage. So I would not bet strongly against the dollar. Now, right now, the dollar's in a channel. The U.S. dollar index is trading between 92 and 100. And if it breaks, it's been trading back and forth in that channel. If it breaks down through 92 and stays through, or if it breaks up above 100 and breaks up, we could see a shift up or down. And that's the thing to watch. But I would be careful to bet strongly against a big dollar breakdown anytime soon.
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you, George. Catherine, I'm going back 6 months. When Donald Trump first released his financial statement, you said, boy, the banks have their hooks in him big time, or words to that effect.
Right.
Now, My point and question and concern is this. We're going to a convention, and the delegates there, most of them, have already been committed, and yet they don't know enough about this man's finances to be able to say whether or not anything he says about his wealth is actually true. The detail is not there. You read it, and you also know that Hillary Clinton has released her tax returns, but Donald Trump has not. Now, I believe that his friend, Adnan Khashoggi, who sold him the Princess Anne yacht, which was docked right here in Norfolk, Virginia, beautiful yacht, who sold him that yacht when he, when it became known that he was not the richest man in the world, he was only worth $253 million. That's why he had to sell that yacht to Donald Trump, who was believed at that time to be nowhere near as rich as Adnan Khashoggi. When the facts come out, the big talkers don't survive. And we have a Republican Party which won't even look to see whether or not the banks control this man, as you said, with hooks so deep that they can make him do anything they want him.
Good point, Michael. And Catherine, thank you for being on the program. Catherine Austin Fitz, up next, a little bit of remote viewing and the Flat Earth.